This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at all of the Premier League action from the weekend. Still, yet again, we are coming off the weekend talking more about VAR than the matters on the field. We'll be asking which managers are under the most amount of pressure. Could Unai Emery be on the verge of losing his job at Arsenal? Our focus this afternoon will be on Wolves, Tottenham, a little bit of Chelsea, and also a little bit of Manchester United. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon to review all of the Premier League action, and there most certainly is a lot to look back on as we look back at all the results from the weekend. It started on the south coast at Bournemouth, a pretty horrible day down on the south coast on Saturday lunchtime, and Bournemouth came out winners 1-0, a goal from Josh King, who of course was on the books at Manchester United in their academy before moving to Blackburn and then on to Bournemouth. A Norwegian like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and even though he was waxing lyrical about how good a player he was, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer quite clearly not happy with his side, dropping points, dropping all 3 points. They had won 3 away games in all competitions before that after a horrendous run after he was given the job permanently by Manchester United, but back down to earth for Manchester United, who are now 10th in the table on 13 points. Bournemouth up into 7th as a result of that win. Then to the 3 o'clock kickoffs. We had 6 of them on Saturday afternoon at the Emirates. It was Arsenal 1, Wolves 1. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang continuing his good goal-scoring form gave the Gunners a 1-0 lead, but Wolves, the game suited them down to the ground. They played really well, created a lot of chances, had 25 shots at the Emirates on Saturday. Raul Jimenez got the equaliser, and perhaps Wolves could have gone on to get even more than that. At Villa Park and at the Etihad, the top two were playing away. Liverpool were playing away from home at Villa Park. City at home against Southampton. Both were 1-0 down going into the final 20 minutes of both games. At Villa Park, it was Trezeguet who had given the lead to Aston Villa, but an 87th minute equaliser from Andrew Robertson was followed by a 94th minute winner by Sadio Mane from Trent Alexander-Arnold's cross to give Liverpool all 3 points and maintain their 6-point lead at the top of the table. At the Etihad, Southampton were given an early lead by James Ward-Prowse after a mistake by Edison, and at 70 minutes it looked like Southampton might get something, and even more than that, they might even get all 3 points after being smashed 9-0 by Leicester only 8 days previous to that. But goals from Sergio Aguero and only a second Premier League goal for Manchester City for Kyle Walker gave City all 3 points. So both of the top two, 1-0 down, but coming back to win 2-1. Down on the south coast at the Amex Stadium, Brighton versus Norwich. It's perhaps a little bit too early to say it, but it did feel like a real six-pointer for both sides. And Brighton came out winners 2-0. The return of Leandro Trossard, who has missed a number of games recently due to injury, was a big, big boost for Graham Potter, and they are now up to 8th place, Brighton, ahead of both Manchester United and Tottenham. And Norwich currently sat in the bottom three, going through a pretty terrible run ever since those wins at home against Newcastle, and then obviously the one against Manchester City. It's been a big, big slide for Daniel Farke's side. Then up to Bramall Lane, and one of the real surprise packages, one of the fantastic teams so far this season, has been Sheffield United. What a story that has been this season. The job that Chris Wilder has done over the last couple of years to bring them into the Premier League, and they are currently sat 6th in the Premier League table after a 3-0 win against Burnley. 2 from Lundstrom and 1 from Fleck gave Sheffield United and Chris Wilder all 3 points. As I said, they are now 6th place in the Premier League table, just 1 point behind Arsenal, who are in 5th. For Burnley, they are currently down in 14th, but 4 points above the relegation zone. Final 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday afternoon was at the London Stadium, and a bit of a a shock at there, to say the least. West Ham have been in poor form recently after a good start to the season, but Newcastle went 3-0 up in that game around the hour mark when Jonjo Shelvey scored a free kick after both centre halves for Newcastle had scored. Goals late on from Balbuena and Snodgrass perhaps made it look a bit better, because realistically Newcastle could have been about 6 or 7 nil up by the end of the first half. It lifts Newcastle up into 15th, and they now put a decent gap between themselves and the relegation zone, and are now just 1 point behind West Ham, who a few games ago people were talking them up and really giving them a lot of praise for their performances. But a disappointing result for the Hammers. The final game on Saturday was at Vicarage Road, as the bottom of the table side, Watford, were seeking their first league win of the season. But the wait continues for Kike Sanchez Flores and his men. They went down 2-1 at home against Chelsea. A goal for Tammy Abraham, as well as another for Christian Pulisic, not long after that hat-trick against Burnley. A late penalty from Gerard Deulofeu perhaps gave Watford a bit of hope in the final moments of the game. It seemed like Ben Foster was going to score a great diving header, only for Kepa Arrizabalaga to save it and prevent a dramatic ending to that game. So Watford still rooted to the bottom of the table, 5 points from their opening 11 games, still without a win, and 6 points from safety. Then on to yesterday's games, Crystal Palace versus Leicester. Palace had won the four fixtures between these two sides over the last couple of seasons, but that run came to an end at Selhurst Park. Goals from Chaglar Soyuncu and also from Jamie Vardy sealed all 3 points for Leicester, who are now up into third place in the Premier League table on 23 points, just a couple of points off Manchester City, and Leicester playing pretty well at the moment. And then the final game of the weekend, which perhaps created the most controversy, was at Goodison Park. It ended Everton 1, Tottenham 1. Dele Alli had given Spurs the lead before Cenk Tosun, late on in added time, equalised for Everton. But that is kind of, that is only the start of what we're going to talk about with this game. Obviously, shrouded in, well, it's two big talking points, really. One was VAR, and also the injury to Andre Gomes, which obviously was a horrific injury. Fortunately, haven't actually seen it, the whole action of it, because it was a horrendous injury, and I'm sure everyone gives our best to Andre Gomes and hopes that his recovery goes really, really well. Having surgery, I think, today, so all our best goes to him, and hopefully he has a speedy recovery, because it was a horrendous injury. But that's really where we start from, because as a result of that, Heung-min Son got sent off for that tackle. Now, the reasoning from PGMOL as to why this was a red card was because of the severity of the consequence rather than necessarily the tackle. Now, no one's diverting attention away from the fact that it's a horrible injury, and no one would wish that on anyone. But I think what happened there was emotion took over, that because of the situation, you could see a number of the players, including Heung-min Son and Serge Aurier, who were both involved, quite visibly distressed by it. And I think originally Martin Atkinson was going to give a yellow card, which seemed like an adequate punishment, I suppose, if you want to put it, for that type of a tackle. But it felt like emotion took over because of the severity of the injury, which led to Atkinson changing his mind and giving a red card. It was not a red card tackle. As I said, that doesn't take anything away from the fact that it was a horrible moment, and everyone wishes Andre Gomes a really speedy recovery. But that's escaping from the fact that it was most definitely not a red card challenge. And this was a catalogue of errors, really, yesterday. And VAR was an absolute joke again this weekend. And in this game in particular, this game of football took 104 minutes of action. I mean, that's actually kind of over 2 hours if you take from the start, including half time. That's utterly ridiculous that someone would sit there for 104 minutes watching the game. And it was a catalogue of errors where VAR sometimes was used for 2-3 minutes without the referee even going to look on a screen, and then not even overturning the decision. Quite clearly, if you want to look at it over and over again, you're perhaps tempted to make that change of a decision. Dele Alli's handball, which wasn't given a penalty against Tottenham. There seems to be a difference in the way that referees are officiating, that if it hits an attacker's arm and then it goes in, then it's automatically given a free kick the other way. Dele Alli, only he will know whether he deliberately handled that ball. But it was a handball. And so if you're going to give it for one way, you have to give it for the other. Richarlison wasn't given a penalty after a foul by Davinson Sanchez. There was also, late on in the game, once Everton had equalised, another foul by Sanchez, which could have led to a red card. Whether there was enough contact for Richarlison to go down is another thing. But it was an absolute disgrace. And VAR had yet another appalling weekend at Villa Park. Liverpool thought they'd equalised in the first half through Roberto Firmino. It was then subsequently ruled out for offside after a couple of minutes of looking at it. Now, part of the problem with this is that one view shows Firmino onside from the moment the ball is played by Mane. Then there's another view where the ball goes out of view, so you don't know whether it's being kicked or not, which then showed Firmino's armpit offside. It was an utterly ludicrous situation. And I'm fairly sure if Firmino had scored with his armpit, I'm fairly sure there'd be lots of people calling for it to be ruled out for a handball. So you cannot win. It was an utter ludicrous decision. I'm still kind of for the fact that offsides are definitive. It doesn't matter whether it's an inch or 5 yards, you are offside. But with an armpit, that would then cause another debate as to whether you can even score with your armpit, because everyone has this problem with whereabouts on your arm it hits. Another awful weekend for VAR, and you do ask the question, what is the point, even for people like me who've been big supporters of it over the years, and bringing it in, really questioning why on earth we bothered with it and feel like football was a lot better without it. If you've got any views on that, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Also asking the question, is Unai Emery on the verge of losing his job? People citing his kind of lack of communication in English, I think, is a bit of a poor excuse to use, but I look at Arsenal and think they're no better off than they were under Wenger, and if anything, they may have even gone slightly backwards since he left. So where are Arsenal at? They're currently fifth in the table, but do Arsenal fans still have the patience with Unai Emery? And also, one big breaking news story to bring you this afternoon is that Real Madrid are considering making a bid of £70 million plus Gareth Bale for Raheem Sterling. I don't think City will be entertaining that offer. I think it would have to be a lot more money and perhaps not even include Gareth Bale for City to even contemplate negotiating with that. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking more about the Premier League action. On the South Coast, it finished Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 0. So another bad result for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And earlier on the Breakfast Show, Richard Lee and Patrick Christie, they were joined by former Manchester United winger Ben Thornley. And they started off by asking him about the poor performance and results at Bournemouth.
Unfortunately, yeah, from what they'd started to create, starting really with the Liverpool game after the international break, when they changed the system and went to a back three and actually threw Liverpool for a good hour, really. They couldn't really get to grips with the way Manchester United were operating. And I thought were thoroughly good value for the draw they've got. And the performance was probably better than the result in terms of we really needed the points, if you catch my drift. But the performance was there. And then obviously from not having won an away game for such a while, you know, they went to Partizan Belgrade. All right, they're not a great side, but they haven't lost at home in 11 games. Went to Norwich and I thought played convincingly well. Then went to Chelsea and have beaten them for the second time this season when they were coming off the back of 7 straight wins. So there were signs there that a little corner was starting to be turned. And you thought, you know what, with Bournemouth to come, Partizan at home, and then Brighton before the international break, we could sit with 19 points. Mm. We could have qualified, which we still can, by the way, for the next phase of the Europa League with 2 games to spare. And all of a sudden, that is a really, really good sort of, 2.5-3 weeks of football where they've managed to win away from home, get some points on the board, catapult themselves up the table, which you can still do. We're still falling within that window where a couple of wins can push you back up. But similarly, you lose a game like we did disappointingly, as you quite rightly said on Saturday. It can have the adverse effect. And I think everybody was expecting us to go and beat Bournemouth because of the way that they play expansive football and not frightened of having a go. And we just didn't exploit that at all.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting position United find themselves in. I mean, six points separates 12 places in the league at the moment. It's and there's a lot of teams that are in that middle section. United right in the middle of that. Had you, as you said, had they have won, they would have found themselves in sixth place. As it is, they're in 10th. I suppose looking at this team, it's more so for me the performances where they do go 1-0 down. One of the issues they seem to have had this season is them breaking down the opposition. And really, at the weekend, I think Ramsdale had one save to make and they hit the post towards the end. But other than that, very little. It wasn't the best conditions, it's fair to say, with 70 miles an hour winds, which isn't going to help and what have you. But at the moment, they're just lacking that creativity. Are they lacking a number nine? Is it as simple as that? Because they do seem to have shored up somewhat defensively.
Yes, they have showed up some, you know, defensively. Albeit, if you can't score goals, and then you are susceptible to losing 1-0, which is what has been happening to us when we have lost the games. They've only been by the odd goal. We haven't been absolutely trounced in any games. With him not being in the side, I do feel as though that we do miss Paul Pogba. We do miss that creativity. I mean, they have tried Andreas Pereira there. They've tried Jesse Lingard there. They've tried Juan Mata there in that sort of number 10 role. And to be able to get the creativity that we need. But I think that the one thing that was missing for us on Saturday was what looked like a really good sort of understanding between Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford that had developed at Norwich and that looked like really difficult to deal with. Whereas Marcus, I thought, had still had a decent game on Saturday. Anthony Martial didn't really offer anything. And that understanding, that link-up play that we saw so prevalent at Norwich just didn't come to the fore at all against Bournemouth. And when you haven't got anybody else sort of on the game, Dan James started the game well. We got in behind Rico, the left-back, on a couple of occasions. But then they got to grips with that Bournemouth and that avenue was closed off and we didn't really get Dan James in the game after that. And it was a story of a sort of very disappointing game for Manchester United that didn't really see them create much. Yes, we did have the chance when Mason Greenwood hit the post and Ramsdale, I think, made one or two saves where he dived and pushed them out. But we didn't get into the centre of the goal. We didn't use the conditions. There was swirling winds and we didn't test Aaron Ramsdale anywhere near enough.
Yeah, exactly. There was quite a mean but funny meme that was going around on Twitter, which is that a note was passed to Jesse Lingard during the game. And you see him reading it and the camera, you know, zooms in. It just says, "Stop being so bad at football." Which is obviously is a bit unfair. But there is something in that, which is that this Manchester United team is seriously lacking in quality. How long is it going to take, do you reckon? How many transfer windows is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer going to need in order to sort that out?
Well, I think he is going to certainly need a couple more. We don't know what's going to happen in January. We don't know what's going to happen come next summer. But I think it would only be fair because you can see the way that that Ollie is trying to go with his football and with the players that he's trying to use, and he's not frightened of introducing youth into the system. We've seen that with Mason Greenwood. We've seen it with Brandon Williams. We've seen it with John Gomez Garner. And these are all guys that I've been watching for the last 18 months, 2 years in the 23s, and thoroughly deserve a chance in the first team. And perhaps with the way things are going, might get more because there are some of the players that we're seeing week in, week out that we're expecting more from. And at the moment, it's not happening on a more consistent basis. And we thought we were just about getting that. And Saturday felt like taking one step forward in the last sort of three or four games and then taking two steps back because, as you quite rightly said, we're in the middle of where these teams that win games are gonna leap above you. And we just can't keep slipping up the way that we're doing if we've got aspirations of certainly getting into the top four. And I thought Bournemouth on Saturday with Brighton next week, which is no gimme, by the way, I still felt with the form that we were starting to show, we had a real good chance of going into the international break with 19 points, which is now going to be 16 max, as long as we can do the business against Brighton on Sunday.
That was the former Manchester United winger Ben Thornley, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show. Remember, you can catch The Breakfast Show every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10 a.m. Let's turn our attention to one of the other games on Saturday. Wolves picked up a point away at Arsenal, perhaps could have got even more from that. And to review that game and talk all things Wolves, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Nick Masheter, Midlands football writer at the PA. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Nick. As I mentioned, a 1-1 draw was a typical Wolves performance. It looked like a game that suited them down to the ground. They had 25 shots during the game. Was the view actually coming away from that game that Wolves really could and potentially should have won that game?
Yeah, I'm sure there's been sort of a case with a few games this season, really. Southampton at home a couple of weeks ago, where they drew 1-1, and were, you know, arguably saying they should have done a little bit better there. They'd like to turn these draws into wins now. You know, they've drawn 7 out of 11 games so far. Only lost 2. They've only won 2. So turning these draws into wins, you know, even just 1 or 2 of them would see them in and around the top 6, which would, I mean, where they're sitting now, about 12th, I think, at the minute. So, you know, they are adapting well to sort of the European travels that they've got to do, obviously, this season. And they are nothing but hard to beat, of course.
It's a really interesting statistic, actually, that Wolves have scored 86% of their goals in the second half of games this season. What would you put that down to, Nick? Is it a fact that Wolves are slow starters, or more actually a case of they keep going in games and actually they get better and better the longer a game goes on?
I think it's probably a bit of both. There's always two sides to everything. So, yeah, I think it is probably a bit of both. But you've got to look at the way that they the way that they finish games and the way they keep getting stronger. It's just a testament to how well drilled they are, how well sort of honed they are, what they do in training, and what Nuno and the backroom staff, how they work with them and keep them fit, because obviously it's a small squad. You know, we saw against Aston Villa in the Carabao Cup last week that it made a lot of changes, and on the bench it was a bunch of kids and Rui Patricio. So there isn't a lot of depth within the first team squad, because Nuno likes to rely on a small squad, as I said before, and the kids. But what they have got in that 18 to 20, 21 players who are sort of the senior players as such, they're really well oiled, so to speak. And you know, it's just unfortunate that they've lost, you know, Willy Bowley to a bit of a freak injury, really, that he got in training last week.
How big a loss do you think, Nick, that losing Willy Bolly for a number of months will be to this side? Because at the weekend, Nuno played a back three of Dendonka, Cody and Sias. A number of those players, Sias and Dendonka in particular, can play midfield. Dendonka's played there quite a bit this season. How big a blow is that going to be? And in the short term, do you think that Wolves will be able to deal with his absence?
We'll only know that kind of sort of come Christmas, really, when they've had a month or two without him. But he is an integral part to what they've done over the last couple of years, and obviously what they want to do going forward. He's very good on the ball, very good ball playing defender, very calm. Probably doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, if he was playing for Liverpool or someone else, he might be being compared to Van Dijk, given his sort of calmness and, you know, how he's collected with the ball. Losing Brian Bennett as well for the last couple of games doesn't help either. So that kind of just sort of puts into perspective the lack of depth almost that they've got in the squad. It was a calculated risk not adding more bodies in the summer when they've got more games. You know, we'll only know in probably the next couple of months whether that's back five or not.
Another goal on the weekend for Raul Jimenez. It's his 11th in all competitions so far this season. When he first joined the Premier League, I think there was a view that although he looked like a decent player, wasn't necessarily contributing the goals that you would want from a top-quality centre-forward in the Premier League. But he seems to not only have an all-round game where he works really hard off the ball and brings other players into the game, now what he's doing is he's combining that with a good number of goals as well.
Yeah, and you know, to think that this is a player who's had 2 weeks off in the last, where are we now, kind of sort of 14, 15, 16 months. He's played pretty much continuously since the start of last season. having obviously played for Mexico in the Gold Cup in the summer. So you kind of expect him to run out of steam at some point, but because he's an all-action player, he doesn't just sort of sit in the six-yard box or sit in the 18-yard box and wait for the ball to come to him. He really does work his socks off, and he's like Bowley's a sort of integral part to how Wolves play. What they would have liked would have been Patrick Cotrone to hit the ground running similarly this season after he joined from AC Milan. But unfortunately, I think, you know, fortunately for Jimenez, he's not able to get a rest because Cotrone's still not shown perhaps that he's got that cutting edge to back him up and bail him out. So I think Jimenez is a brilliant buy for Wolves in the market as well. Getting him for $32 million was decent business as well. And you know, everybody talks about Manchester United needing a striker. I really do think they could do an awful lot worse. And I'm not touting for a move here, but they could do an awful lot worse. And look at Raúl Jiménez.
So looking ahead then, Nick, to Wolves' next game, it's in the Europa League at home on Thursday against Slovan Bratislava. After a disappointing start to the group stages after that 1-0 loss at home against Braga, it's back-to-back away wins. Do you think Wolves, in what looked like quite a difficult group for them at the start of it, do you think they're in good shape now to qualify, so long as they get a win like people would expect them to on Thursday?
Yeah, that will put them in really, really good stead going to Braga at the end of the month. And I think should Wolves win on Thursday, you would expect them and Braga to qualify from the group. So the win in Bratislava a couple of weeks ago was crucial, but it's not a foregone conclusion. I thought Bratislava did very well. I thought they played very well, especially first half. I think they caught Wolves a little bit cold. I certainly wasn't expecting them to be as good as they were in the first half, and they've got a goal scorer in Sporak, I think. I think he proved that he can cause them problems, and wouldn't be surprised to see him getting a move at the end of the season to a bigger club or a bigger league.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nick. That was Nick Mashita, a Midlands football writer at the PA, giving his views on what was a really accomplished performance by Nuno Espirito Santo's side on Saturday. As I said, 25 shots they had away from home at the Emirates. It was a game that absolutely suited this team down to the ground. They enjoy not having a lot of possession, playing on the counter-attack. They created plenty of chances, and even though they went 1-0 down in the end, I think some Wolves fans would have come away from the Emirates thinking, well, there was an opportunity missed there to get all 3 points. They're up to 11th now, Wolves, unbeaten in their last 6 games. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Tottenham.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. As I mentioned earlier, a pretty eventful game at Goodison Park yesterday afternoon that ended Everton 1, Tottenham 1. And to get the Spurs perspective now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Flav from the Fighting Cock. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Flav. As I said, a pretty eventful game at Everton. Before we talk about the specifics of it, what did you take away from this game from a Tottenham perspective? Did you look at the performance and think there were positives to take, or were you thinking now that it's 12 games without a win away from home that those concerns are growing even more?
I don't think it's... I had the same feeling before as I did afterwards. I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. The only time we're going to have an opportunity to make proper changes in the transfer window, because what we need is new players. So I wasn't surprised by the performance. It was a little bit it was a very scrappy game. Both teams were desperate not to lose, and you saw that lack of confidence, especially going forward in both teams. But in Spurs, I did see little signs that things could change. Often we were just a couple of inches short of making that breakthrough, and I think really what you're seeing is a team that doesn't have its attacking fulcrum in Eriksen working at all. I think if he would have been at the top of his form, that game would have been very different. And it's a little bit... I mean, it's easier to understand if it is the problem of one player, because the other team, the rest of the side was playing semi-decently. But Eriksen was so below the pace that it meant that anything that went through him ended up in us losing possession or it being turned over. And it was alarming how poorly he played. Not that we weren't expecting it, it's just... he's so much better than what we're seeing currently.
So let's talk about VAR. And obviously one of the big decisions was the decision to send off Heung-Min Son after that obviously horrendous injury to Andre Gomes. Now, obviously, it's important, I think, to take that out of it, although the Premier League have said, that the PGMOL have said, that the reason why he was sent off was because of the severity of the injury, the consequences of his tackle. But I don't think there's anyone out there realistically that sat here today thinking that was a red card tackle. Obviously, the injury was horrendous, but the tackle was nothing more than a yellow. It was probably just about a yellow, but nothing more. How frustrated were you that obviously everyone was thinking of Andre Gomes in that moment, thinking, really hope he's all right, but at the same time thinking, how on earth has Martin Atkinson sent him off?
Yeah, I was obviously, it was a horror tackle. Honestly, if I'm being completely blunt, my first instinct was looking at how distraught Son was and wondering whether or not it's going to impact the way he plays the rest of the game, if I'm being bluntly honest. Because broken legs, you know, cruciate ligament injuries, dislocated elbows that we've seen with Lloris this season, it's a part of the game. It's horrible. You don't want to see it to happen to anybody, but it's a part of the game. So I was more really concerned about Son's mental state at that point, or whether or not we're going to be able to finish the game, if he'd even be able to finish if he wasn't sent off. But for him then to be sent off, I didn't know the rule. I didn't know there was such a rule that if someone is severely injured as a result of a challenge where perhaps the guy wasn't going for the ball like Son was, and he was cynical, and I think it was a yellow card, that can be upgraded to a red card. Like, there were so many variables that led to Andre Gomes breaking his ankle, that to penalise Son in such a fashion is ridiculous. If Aurier had been a foot back from where he was, Gomes wouldn't have broken his ankle. If he'd have landed differently, he wouldn't have broken his ankle. If Son had absolutely clattered him and sent him up in the air, he wouldn't have broken his ankle. So to upgrade that to a red card just because there was a severe injury at the end of it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's not even a talking point, really, because I think everybody's in agreement. Like, everybody's in agreement that the red card shouldn't have stood. But if that is the rule of the game, you have to accept it, because even if we appeal it, we're never going to get it overturned, because the referee's gone by what the rules of the book say. In order to overturn it, they'd have to change the rules, which I doubt they're going to do. So
the game took nearly 105 minutes to be played out. Are we getting to a point, Flav, where VAR, even the kind of the biggest supporters, and I put myself in that category as well, I was one of the biggest advocates of it, but yeah, now it's getting to a point, it was utterly farcical how some of those decisions were taking 3 minutes to make, and then they didn't even change their decision, they just stuck by it. It's getting utterly ridiculous at the moment.
Yeah, I think that you're seeing people, as you say, with proponents of VAR turn on it now. They perhaps still like the idea of VAR overturning like obvious errors. Probably is a healthy thing for the game, obvious errors. I'm not talking about minuscule centimetres of offside rules or handballs that the human eye could never see. If the referee makes a clear error, if six people are offside on a corner and the ref can't see it, then VAR should come in and say, actually, that's ridiculous, it's not a goal. But anything other than that, you've got to give it the referee's discretion and just leave VAR out of it completely. That's the only way it's going to work. So if we're in a situation now where every single thing's getting called back, you're going to destroy the flow of the game. And moreover, you could destroy what's great about going to watch football, which is that moment, that explosion of euphoria when your team scores a goal. In the biggest games, there's nothing like it at all. And VAR is single-handedly destroyed that in one season, within 3 months of being inside the game. I was at the Spurs Bayern Munich game and we went 1-0 up at Heung-Min Son, and we didn't celebrate like I have done in great new European nights, because I 100% knew that VAR was going to bring it back and I knew it was tight. So you're not celebrating, and then a minute goes by and you get the goal and you're half celebrating then because that moment's passed. So you're destroying the greatest thing about the game just to get a decision 100% correct all the time. And as we see, that even when they pull it back, as we saw with Dele Alli, it hit him on the arm. It, by the rules of the game, that should be a penalty. It wasn't given. So what is the point of it? It's a complete waste of time.
Talking about matters on the field then, Dele Alli scored Tottenham's goal yesterday. It's his second goal in his past three league matches. Do you think that Tottenham fans are starting to see Ali come back, because the last 18 months have been very different to the 18 months before that, where he was a real star for Tottenham, a real star for England, actually, but he's gone through a really tough period. Do you think, are you starting to see signs that he's starting to get back to where he was a couple of years ago?
Well, we saw a good performance against Everton so far. That's what we've seen. Previously against Liverpool, he was as anonymous as you could possibly be as a midfielder. So we will wait and see. What you remember about the last 18 months is a lot of that he was out injured with a hamstring injury. And coincidentally, our form has dropped since then. He got injured in the last time he won away against Fulham. He went off on about 70 minutes of a hamstring. And he's come back and he hasn't been in the form that he was previously. Although he did have good away at Ajax second half, he was instrumental in that return. He just needs games and he needs to be trusted by the manager and, you know, he to be playing in the team that's full of confidence. So Dele Alli is a symptom of wider problems at Tottenham that when eventually will be fixed, you'll see the Dele Alli that we know and expect performances from.
One man that wasn't playing for Tottenham yesterday was Harry Kane. It emerged earlier in the day that he was probably going to miss out due to illness, could miss out on the trip to Belgrade as well. How big a loss was he yesterday? How did Tottenham's game change as a result of not having Kane up top?
I don't think it changed massively. I think we're still playing the same sort of football. It's just a lot of it was a little bit less direct. I think they defended in the air with much more ease than they would have done if Kane hadn't been there. Of course, he's one of the best in the top three best number nines in the world. So you're gonna miss him if he's out. Against Belgrade, scoring goals won't be our problem out there. It's just whether or not we can cope with the intense atmosphere. Different playing from away than home, but their defence was so poor against us at White Lane. I'm pretty sure we can score a goal out there if we can keep our heads. So, you know, I'd probably have even rested Kane and got him fit for the weekend, because the Premier League's become much more important now than Champions League football.
Tottenham are now winless in their last 12 Premier League away games, just two wins in the past 10 games overall in all competitions for Spurs. You mentioned they've got that Champions League game in midweek away at Red Star Belgrade. How concerning is it for Spurs fans that the last time Tottenham won an away Premier League game was against a side that aren't even in the Premier League anymore in Fulham? The last time they won away was at Goodison Park, actually last December. How worrying is this trend for Tottenham?
It's more worrying in the Premier League. I mean, we beat Ajax away in late April, early May. So we've won away games. It's just in the Premier League that this extends, you know, back to January. It becomes a discussion around every away game you have, doesn't it? It's like, can we win away? Can we win away? And this is our worst away run since George Graham was at the club. So that's a long, long time. But the situation isn't the same as it has been previously for Tottenham. You know, we need to refresh this squad. We need to get new bodies in, and that can only happen when we can do that, which is in the window. If after January we're still struggling away from home in the way that we have been, having bought players in, then you definitely need to look at Pochettino. And if we don't sign anyone, you definitely need to look at Pochettino and Enoch. But until that time, it's a bit unfair to judge.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Flav. That was Flav from the Fighting Cock, talking all things Tottenham after a 1-1 draw yesterday away at Everton. Obviously shrouded in controversy with all those VAR calls, some of them overturned, some of them not. And Tottenham's winless run away from home in the Premier League continues. It's now 12 Premier League away games without a win. The last time they went away was against Fulham, who are no longer in the Premier League. Their last win away from home at a current Premier League club was at Goodison Park against Everton in a high-scoring affair last December. Tottenham are away in the week in the Champions League away at Red Star Belgrade. It may have been very easy for Tottenham at home to Belgrade, but it will not be easy going over there with 50-odd thousand fans in Belgrade not exactly welcoming them with open arms. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 07827 20558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. We'll be talking all things Chelsea after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. So plenty to talk about from the Premier League weekend. We've already talked about Tottenham's 1-1 draw away at Everton. We've also been talking about Wolves, who drew 1-1 away at Arsenal and perhaps could have had more. Also a little bit on Manchester United's 1-0 loss away at Bournemouth. For Frank Lampard's Chelsea, who are in action tomorrow night back in the Champions League at home against Ajax, they were at Vicarage Road against winless Watford, and they won by 2-1. Tammy Abraham scored again, as did Christian Pulisic after his hat-trick away at Burnley. A late Gerard Deulofeu penalty wasn't enough to get anything for Watford, who are still without that win, but Chelsea continue a decent little run. They still look frail defensively, but in attack, they are certainly producing and scoring quite a few goals. They're up to fourth, level on points with Leicester in third on 23 points. And earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by Leon Carbis, editor at Chelsea Fancast. And he was originally asked on whether Chelsea were so dominant in their 2-1 win at Watford.
Most definitely for the 80 minutes. I thought we were utterly dominant in almost every aspect of the game. There was glimpses of free-flowing football, some tremendous play, particularly in sort of the transitional phase and interchanging in midfield. I think that Jorginho and Kovacic were absolutely phenomenal on Saturday, and that was exemplified as well by Jorginho's assist for Tammy Abraham's goals. And then just sort of the abundance of chances that were created too. You look at the fact that Ben Foster had to resort to a catalogue of magnificent saves to prevent us from scoring and adding to the goal tally. And then obviously the controversial VAR intervention changed the nature of the game, and the last 10 minutes became quite nervy. But for the most part, I thought we were utterly dominant.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. Do you know, I watched it was interesting watching Chelsea. I haven't watched too much from this season, but the way in which they keep the ball at the back, and it's that confidence they play with, even in their own penalty area, just little triangles all over the place. And when they do break and they get through that press, the amount of times that Mason Mount or whoever it might be was then like bearing down on the Watford back four is really impressive to watch. They just look so comfortable at the back.
Most definitely. And I think that's in part of sort of the development that we've seen in modern day football. You know, this willingness to play with from the back and have defenders who are also technically gifted as well as being sort of defensively astute. But also I think it's credit to sort of the leadership qualities of Jorginho, because you can see him so many times on the pitch in constant dialogue with his teammates, directing players where to pass the ball. For instance, for that first goal, he told Kurt Zouma not to pass to him initially, to play the ball into the channel to Mason Mount, that then led to him occupying a central position, allowing him to play that assist for Tammy Abraham. So to have a player like that who's endowed with that vision, who can read the game so quickly, I think that's of massive help in terms of playing that sort of free-flowing, possession-based, but also penetrative possession-based football. I think last season we saw a Chelsea team that was stuck to a rigid and stringent system that prioritised sort of passing sequences and repetitive, monotonous passing sequences over creativity, over sort of intuition. And this season we're seeing penetrative possession-based football with imagination, with creativity, with that urgency and willingness to attack. And so far, we're reaping the benefit.
Yeah, well, I want to talk to you about Jorginho. Like I said, incredible ball for the first goal. The vision, first-time pass from near enough the halfway line to whip it in behind the defender for Tammy Abraham in the way that he did was superb. I get the feeling that the feeling around Jorginho has changed this season, because at times it wasn't particularly positive last season.
No, most definitely. But I think also you have to recognise that last season he was almost scapegoated due to his association with Maurizio Sarri. I think people recognised, people acknowledged Jorginho just to be a mouthpiece of Sarri, and therefore to have a go at Jorginho was in effect to have a go at Sarri. I don't necessarily think the criticism levelled at Jorginho was due to his personal attributes or due to him as a person himself. I think rather it was a means of trying to attack Sarri.
Indeed. You mentioned Pulisic, another goal, 4 goals in 2 games. Starting to see the best of him now.
Well, most definitely. And I think that his skill set is very much suited to the Premier League. I thought, I remember being on your radio station a month ago, and the sort of the discussion around Pulisic was markedly different. And I said that he has the qualities to succeed. It's just a matter of acclimatizing with the physicality and sort of the frenzied and fast-paced nature of the Premier League. I think he's definitely done that over recent weeks. We've seen how purposeful he's been in sort of cameo appearances off the bench. You look at what he did against Ajax, providing the assist for Michy Batshuayi's goal. You look at what he did against Newcastle, a game that, you know, we had to contend against a team that were willing to sit back for the entirety of the game, and he helped create the space that led to Marcus Alonso's goal. And then look at those the hat trick that he scored at Turf Moor and the goal he scored on Saturday. He's showing great awareness. He's showing great willingness to drive opponents and sort of penetrate opposition defences. And I think that he's one of the few players that we have who's willing to be direct in that manner in terms of taking players on, be that cutting inside or going outside. And I think he's a real asset at the moment.
Since the opening day, obviously lost to United on the opening day, last 10 games, 23 points, which is a fantastic return from the last 10 games. They're only 2 points off City. You know, I was going to ask you whether a top four finish is attainable, but I think I know the answer to that. I'm going to ask you, do you think they can challenge City?
I'm not sure. I think it's very, very important to take each game as it comes. And I recognise how much of a cliche that sounds. But I think that's the mentality that we have to go with at the moment, because we have to recognise the extent of our overachievement, in the sense, considering the fact that N'Golo Kante has been absent for the majority of the season and Antonio Rudiger had only returned for a brief 45 minutes at Wolves before suffering another injury. So the fact that we're doing it at the moment, given sort of the list of injuries that we've attained so far this season, I think is incredible. And it's much better to be grounded and level-headed and approach each game as it comes, as opposed to thinking about the bigger picture. Because at the moment, you know, we don't want anything to curtail the momentum that we've attained. There's no point allowing sort of over-ambition or high expectations to sort of undermine what has been an incredible start to the season. And I think that it's, in part, that mentality of taking each game as it comes has contributed to the positivity, and, you know, long may that continue.
Yeah, and a quick word on the game tomorrow night. Of course, Ajax in the Champions League. How do you see that one playing out?
Well, it's interesting because I thought we absolutely nullified Ajax for the most part away from home. And from that perspective, I think they'll be sort of empowered with a great understanding of how we play and how we were able to limit their play, their typically free-flowing and expansive style of football. So I think it'll be an even tighter occasion tomorrow night, perhaps a bit more of a cagey contest, because the victory away from home opened the group up. And obviously, if we were to win tomorrow night, I think it would really consolidate our grip as the group leaders and put us in an exceedingly favourable position looking ahead to the Lille and Valencia games. So it's going to be a tight game, but I hope that having already beaten them this season and the added bonus of being at Stamford Bridge will help secure another all-important 3 points.
That was Leon Carbis, editor at Chelsea Fancast, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show. Remember, you can catch Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10 a.m. Well worth a listen. That's it for the Premier League Fan Show. You can continue to get in touch with us this afternoon, of course, on 0208 7020 558, or WhatsApp us on that very same number.
This is Love Sport.